Yes, I repeat the question. Do I see any reason to believe that equal employment laws will be rolled back? Yes, I do. What happens is there's a affirmative action is being rolled back even as we speak. It's being rolled back. It came first in government. That was the whole in the Great Society with Lyndon B. Johnson carrying on Kennedy's policies, and that was the beginning of the EEOC. And it's starting to roll back there. You see it in the military, the judgment that I mentioned to you. Also in the college, the whole of academia is now beginning to question affirmative action. There's almost open warfare on campuses, I would say right now, between the political correctness, which is feminism on campus, and the equality, well, just human equality movement. And it's interesting because what is the main barrier? I made a big point of saying institutions over and over again in my talk, because the main barrier, I think, is not that people aren't disillusioned with affirmative action and the gender bias that's gone on. It's that it's been embedded in institutions, and quite apart from what people think or feel, it will take a number of years for the institutions to respond in such a manner as to eliminate it. And that's one reason why institutions are so important. But yes, I do believe that it's going to, not that it will, but it's inevitable. Yes?
Its ideology is no longer acceptable, but rather that most of the goals that it is going to achieve.
No, I don't. No, I don't. I'll tell you why. Because the organizations that are espousing goals that at least sound similar in many ways, like mine, iFeminist.com, it grew 300% in the last year, and in terms of membership and traffic and such, which is remarkable, and will grow that much this next year. Independent Women's Forum is soaring. These are feminist goals. Now, you might say that the goals are different to some degree, but they're certainly competing goals in that they say respect for women, equality for women, women standing up and taking a leadership role in things. I think what's happened is two things. I think now has been shown to be now and the left. It's not merely that I'm a critic of them, and surely I am, but it's not merely that. It's with their own internal ranks, like Tammy Bruce, the book that's come out, and there's been several books come out that basically explode the whole sincerity and integrity, if you want, of the organizations. Which, oh, Tammy Bruce was the head of NOW in Los Angeles, and had various other prominent roles within left-wing or politically correct feminism, and since became very disillusioned, bitter, one would say, and with cause, because she was the one who wrote the book The Thought Police, and in it she basically chronicles, gives almost a diary-like chronicle of the extraordinary viciousness, lying, slandering that went on as standard policy of the left in terms of feminism and political correctness. And this is one of several books that's come out. So what's happening is, and I think it's a shame to some degree. I would like to deal with the ideas as ideas and not deal with them as these are awful people and we should dismiss their ideas because they're awful people. However, what's happening is their credibility, if you're just asking about the organization declining, an awful lot is happening as they're being battered by these kind of books and insiders coming out. And also their ideas, and also, God, they were hypocritical. Yes, sir?
I have a sad commentary, and I would like your thoughts on it.
Yes, sir.
Starting with the 1850s, women were instrumental in the ending of slavery. This is 70 years before women and woman suffrage got the vote.
Yes.
And what happened after the Civil War was that much of the organization that was so active in attempting to end slavery went directly into what you referred to, into the so-called white slave trade. And people thought that that would be something that would follow slavery into the dustbin very quickly. It did not. The fight against the slavery of young women who were bought and sold then and are bought and sold and smuggled today, you need to go no further than the yellow pages of the San Francisco phone directory to find massage parlors and to, if you wish, meet the young woman from Bosnia or former Soviet Union or Asia who has been smuggled into this country and sold into the trade. We are sitting right now on the waterfront of San Francisco, where a similar trade existed until the 1920s in the buying and selling of merchant seamen. And we joke about it. We talk about people being shanghaied or being slipped a Mickey Finn. There's an interesting point here, and there's a parallel that is useful for the feminist movement. The buying and selling of merchant seamen did not stop until the founding of the merchant seamen's unions and the organizing around the help that could be given to the young women and others who are bought and sold today would be, I think, a touchstone for the energizing of the feminist movement. Would you have a comment?
Oh, I've worked in this area extensively. In terms of prostitution, I've probably interviewed literally hundreds of prostitutes for personal research studies I've done, and know many of them personally. So I would draw many different distinctions clearly than you would, or clearly in my mind, as I was listening to you. For example, to answer your, to do some forward before answering your question, massage parlors in this area, you have to very, very clearly distinguish between women who choose to do this and who do not. Certainly there is absolutely no, anyone who forces a woman into prostitution, into any sex act, I think should be taken out to a back alley and feminism should be explained to him in very graphic terms. I'm not for using the law, but a good 2x4 is a.
May I extend that? You began your speech by talking about Kathleen Berry.
Yes.
Who 30 years ago wrote a book called Female Sex.
Yes, I know. Yes.
Which was dropped like a hot rock by everybody who read it. It was thrown onto remainder shelves 20, 25 years.
Oh, for goodness, I disagree with that totally. She's now writing law for the UN. I don't believe, respectfully, you and I have a disagreement we should pursue over a glass.
No, no, because you said that she is unable to get any representation by way of an agent, a literary agent, who will represent her to talk on that issue.
No, she basically has turned down, she's refused to talk for literary agents, is what's happened. To get back to prostitution, you have to make a very clear line. There's one of the things that's happened is that the feminist movement, iFeminism, basically has made a lot of contacts with what's called the prostitutes' rights movement in America. Now, this is a coalition, again, of individuals and organizations, many of whom, a lady named Norma Jean Almodovar, one of my best friends, is a prostitute. Ex-prostitute, very proud of being a prostitute. Was her choice. That's what she wanted to do. And there has to be a recognition that certain women decide to go into sex work for reasons of their own, the adventure, the high funds, whatever. And if you basically don't refer to the woman in the massage parlor that is probably there by choice down the street, and don't refer only to the women who are being forced into it in some manner through threats or not knowing the language or many ways that are very coercive, then I would basically agree with you. That's called trafficking women, not prostitution. I think that's a clear and very valid distinction. But
I beg to agree.
Oh, well, I don't accept that. I don't accept that at all. Yes.
Yeah, I guess I'm a little confused when in your view about institutions and the use of personal violence versus institutional violence, because if you have the case of coercion of young women into prostitution, and you want to go out in the alley and beat somebody over the head with a board for doing that, other people might have the same idea about injustices, and very soon...
That was an expression of my feelings. It's not that something I would do. No, I didn't advocate people beating people. It was an expression of my feelings, rather like, yay.
But other people have those feelings enacted on them, and that's why we have institutions and laws to restrain that, so that people get punished under due process. But I'm going a little bit somewhere else with this, because you seem to say that laws and institutions are not a way to change people's attitudes. And as you said that, I thought about the tremendous effect of the civil rights laws they've had on our society, both in giving African Americans more opportunities, but even more importantly in terms of our children, who go to much more integrated schools, I mean, some of them do, than I certainly did as a child. And their attitude, the children's attitude towards people of color, is very different from the attitude that I was raised with. And that is by virtue of laws and institutions that have brought about very positive social change and opportunities and more economic equality for groups. And so I'm troubled by this sweeping statement that we shouldn't use laws and institutions as agents to bring about these kinds of attitudinal changes.
Well, first of all, if you're troubled by sweeping statements, I am too, and that's largely a 5-minute speech, a very complex issue. However, I would say that you and I probably have a fundamental disagreement, because I don't agree with you. I don't believe institutions and laws bring social change. I believe you want to use the civil rights movement, Martin Luther King, Rosa Parks, and the protests, and what happened was not laws and institutions were changed, but social change basically made, and laws and institutions will change only in response to social programs and social pressure. So I think that you've got the cause and effect wrong, and
much farther extent.
I don't agree. I don't believe that laws and institutions, to the extent that what the civil rights movement was trying to do was get rid of laws and get rid of, know that in the early days before Martin Luther King's death, basically their whole thrust, the major thrust, you can never say the whole thrust, it was a mammoth thing, mammoth, with many, many agendas and many causes, but was to basically get rid of laws that didn't allow voting, or de facto, whether or not what it said. This is why I always say very carefully, the law and the application of the law, because the law, the content of the law, means nothing. There were voting laws that let blacks vote forever. The application of the law prohibited them from voting. So you want both the law and the application of the law to be gender blind or race blind or whatever. And they basically wanted to roll back all discrimination and get rid of laws that discriminate, take wording out of laws so that not all human beings or just all people. When you have my view of social change is that you cannot change words, you cannot change attitudes by forcing people, by coercing people. You cannot enforce tolerance by saying you must, and if you don't, I'll throw you in jail. And well, shame on you then. Shame on you. Shame on you, because other than self-defense, other than giving me, that's my view. However noble your ideal, however much I share it, to institutionalize it into law and say that people must obey this ideal, that it must be, an ideal must not be enforced by a barrel of a gun. Other than the ideal of this is my body, this is my property, this is my right, and if I want to make a bad decision with it and it doesn't live up to someone's ideal, and I want to make a wrong decision, in some sense, what we've lost in society is mind your own damn business. We've lost that principle. And I don't think that society or law or institutions should institutionalize any ideal that doesn't allow me to say to you, mind your own damn business. And thank you for coming.